Chapter 4. Summoned. Alone in her rooms in the women's apartments, Moiraine adjusted the shawl, embroidered with curling ivy and grapevines, on her shoulders and studied the effect in the tall frame mirror standing in a corner. Her large, dark eyes could appear as sharp as a hawk's when she was angry. They seemed to pierce the silvered glass now. It was only happenstance that she had had the shawl in her saddlebags when she came to Faldara. With the blazing white flame of Tar Valon centered on the wearer's back and long fringe colored to show her Adja, Moiraine's was as blue as a morning sky. The shawls were seldom worn outside Tar Valon, and even there usually only inside the White Tower. Little in Tar Valon besides a meeting of the Hall of the Tower called for the formality of the shawls, and beyond the shining walls a sight of the flame would send too many people running, to hide, or perhaps to fetch the Children of the Light. A white cloak's arrow was as fatal to an Aes Sedai as to anyone else, and the children were too wily to let an Aes Sedai see the bowman before the arrow struck, while she still might do something about it. Moiraine had certainly never expected to wear the shawl in Faldara, but for an audience with the Amyrlin, there were proprieties to observe. She was slender and not at all tall, and smooth-cheeked Aes Sedai agelessness often made her appear younger than she was, but Moiraine had a commanding grace and calm presence that could dominate any gathering. A manner ingrained growing up in the royal palace of Kyriane had been heightened, not submerged, by still more years as an Aes Sedai. She knew she might need every bit of it today, yet much of the calm was on the surface today. There must be trouble, or she would not have come herself, she thought for at least the tenth time. But beyond that lay a thousand questions more. What trouble, and who did she choose to accompany her? Why here? Why now? It cannot be allowed to go wrong now. The great serpent ring on her right hand caught the light dully as she touched the delicate golden chain fastened in her dark hair, which hung in waves to her shoulders. A small, clear blue stone dangled from the chain in the middle of her forehead. Many in the White Tower knew of the tricks she could do using that stone as a focus. It was only a polished bit of blue crystal, just something a young girl had used in her first learning, with no one to guide her. That girl had remembered tales of Angrial and even more powerful Sa'angrial, those fabled remnants of the Age of Legends that allowed Aes Sedai to channel more of the one power than any could safely handle unaided. Remembered, and thought some such focus was required to channel at all. Her sisters in the White Tower knew a few of her tricks and suspected others, including some that did not exist, some that had shocked her when she learned of them. The things she did with the stone were simple and small, if occasionally useful, the kind a child would imagine. But if the wrong women had accompanied the Amyrlin, the crystal might put them off balance because of the tales. A rapid, insistent knocking came at the chamber door. No Shinaran would knock that way, not at anyone's door, but least of all hers. She remained looking into the mirror until her eyes stared back serenely, all thought hidden in their dark depths. She checked the soft leather pouch hanging at her belt. Whatever troubles brought her out of Tar Valon, she will forget them when I lay this trouble before her. A second thumping, even more vigorous than the first, sounded before she crossed the room and opened the door with a calm smile for the two women who had come for her. She recognized them both. Dark-haired Anaya in her blue-fringed shawl and fair-haired Leandrin in her red. Leandrin, not only young-seeming, but young and pretty, with a doll's face and a small, petulant mouth, had her hand raised to pound again. Her dark brows and darker eyes were a sharp contrast to the multitude of pale honey braids brushing her shoulders, but the combination was not uncommon in Tarabon. Both women were taller than Moiraine, though Leandrin by less than a hand. Anaya's blunt face broke into a smile as soon as Moiraine opened the door. That smile gave her the only beauty she would ever have, but it was enough. Almost everyone felt comforted, safe, and special when Anaya smiled at them. "The light shine on you, Moiraine. It's good to see you again. Are you well? It has been so long." My heart is lighter for your presence, Anaya. That was certainly true. It was good to know she had at least one friend among the Aes Sedai who had come to Faldara. The light illumine you. Leandrin's mouth tightened, and she gave her shawl a twitch. The Amaryllis seat. She requires your presence, sister. Her voice was petulant, too, and cold-edged. Not for Moiraine's sake, or not solely. Leandrin always sounded dissatisfied with something. Frowning, she tried to look over Moiraine's shoulder into the room. This chamber, it is warded. We cannot enter. Why do you ward against your sisters? Against all, Moiraine replied smoothly. Many of the serving women are curious about Aes Sedai, and I do not want them pawing through my rooms when I am not here. There was no need to make a distinction until now. She pulled the door shut behind her, leaving all three of them in the corridor. Shall we go? We must not keep the Amaryllis waiting. She started down the hallway with Anaya chatting at her side. Leandrin stood for a moment staring at the door as if wondering what Moiraine was hiding, then hurried to join the others. She bracketed Moiraine, walking as stiffly as a guard. Anaya merely walked, keeping company. Their slippered footsteps fell softly on thick-woven carpets with simple patterns. Liveried women curtsied deeply as they passed, many more deeply than they would have for the Lord of Faldara himself. Aes Sedai, three together, and the Amaryllis seat herself in the keep. It was more honor than any woman of the keep had ever expected in her lifetime. A few women of noble houses were out in the halls, and they curtsied too, which they most certainly would not have done for Lord Agelmar. Moiraine and Anaya smiled and bowed their heads to acknowledge each reverence, from servant or noble equally. Leandrin ignored them all. There were only women here, of course, no men. No Shinaran male above the age of 10 would enter the women's rooms without permission or invitation, although a few small boys ran and played in the halls here. They knelt on one knee, awkwardly, when their sisters dropped deep curtsies. Now and then Anaya smiled and ruffled a small head as she passed. This time, Moiraine, Anaya said, you have been gone from Tar Valon too long, much too long. Tar Valon misses you, your sisters miss you, and you are needed in the White Tower. Some of us must work in the world, Moiraine said gently. I will leave the Hall of the Tower to you, Anaya. Yet in Tar Valon, you hear more of what occurs in the world than I. Too often I outrun what happens where I was yesterday. What news have you? Three more false dragons, Leandrin bit the words off. In Saldea, Mirandi, and Tyr, false dragons ravage the land, the while you blues smile and talk of nothing and try to hold on to the past. Anaya raised an eyebrow, and Leandrin snapped her mouth shut with a sharp sniff. Three, Moiraine mused softly. For an instant her eyes gleamed, but she masked it quickly. Three in the last 2 years, and now three more at once. As the others were, these will be dealt with also. This male vermin and any ragtag rabble who follow their banners. Moiraine was almost amused by the certainty in Leandrin's voice. Almost. She was too aware of the realities, too aware of the possibilities. Have a few months been enough for you to forget, sister? The last false dragon all but tore Gil'dan apart before his army, ragtag, rabble or not, was defeated. Yes, Loghain is in Tar Valon by now, gentled and safe, I suppose, but some of our sisters died to overpower him. Even one sister dead is more loss than we can bear, but Gil'dan's losses were much worse. The two before Loghain could not channel, yet even so the people of Kandor and Arad Doman remember them well. Villages burned, and men dead in battle. How easily can the world deal with three at one time? How many will flock to their banners? There has never been a shortage of followers for any man claiming to be the dragon reborn. How great will the wars be this time? It isn't so grim as that, Anaya said. As far as we know, only the one in Saldea can channel. He has not had time to attract many followers, and sisters should already be there to deal with him. The Tyrans are harrying their false dragon and his followers through Haddon Merc, while the fellow in Mirandi is already in chains. She gave a short, wondering laugh. To think the Mirandians, of all people, would deal with theirs so quickly. Ask, and they do not even call themselves Mirandians, but Lugarders, or Inish Lini, or this or that lord's or lady's man. Yet for fear one of their neighbors would take the excuse to invade, the Mirandians leaped on their false dragon almost as soon as he opened his mouth to proclaim himself. Still, Moiraine said, three at the same time cannot be ignored. Has any sister been able to do a foretelling? It was a slight chance. Few Aes Sedai had manifested any part of that talent, even the smallest part, in centuries, so she was not surprised when Anaya shook her head. Not surprised, but a little relieved. They reached a juncture of hallways at the same time as the Lady Amalisa. She dropped a full curtsy, bowing deep and spreading her pale green skirts wide. "Honor to Tar Valon," she murmured. "Honor to Aes Sedai." The sister of the Lord of Faldara required more than a nod of the head. Moiraine took Amalisa's hands and drew her to her feet. "You honor us, Amalisa. Rise, sister." Amalisa straightened gracefully with a flush on her face. She had never as much as been to Tar Valon, and to be called sister by an Aes Sedai was heady even for someone of her rank. Short and of middle years, she had a dark, mature beauty, and the color in her cheeks set it off. "You honor me too greatly, Moiraine Sedai." Moiraine smiled. "How long have we known each other, Amalisa? Must I now call you my Lady Amalisa, as if we had never sat over tea together?" "Of course not." Amalisa smiled back. The strength evident in her brother's face was in hers, too, and no less for the softer line of cheek and jaw. There were those who said that as hard and renowned a fighter as Agilmar was, he was no better than an even match for his sister. But with the Amerlin seat here, when King Izar visits Faldara, in private I call him Magami, little uncle, as I did when I was a child and he gave me rides on his shoulder, but in public it must be different. Anaya tisked. "Sometimes formality is necessary, but men often make more of it than they must. Please, call me Anaya, and I will call you Amalisa if I may." From the corner of her eye, Moiraine saw Egwene, far down the side hall, disappearing hurriedly around a corner. A stooped shape in a leather jerkin, head down and arms loaded with bundles, shambled at her heels. Moiraine permitted herself a small smile, quickly masked. "If the girl shows as much initiative in Tar Valon," she thought wryly, "she will sit in the Amerlin seat one day. If she can learn to control that initiative. If there is an Amerlin seat left on which to sit." When she turned her attention back to the others, Leandrin was speaking. "And I would welcome the chance to learn more of your land." She wore a smile, open and almost girlish, and her voice was friendly. Moiraine schooled her face to stillness as Amalisa extended an invitation to join her and her ladies in her private garden, and Leandrin accepted warmly. Leandrin made few friends, and none outside the Red Aja. Certainly never outside the Aes Sedai. She would sooner make friends with a man or a Trolloc. Moiraine was not sure Leandrin saw much difference between men and Trollocs. She was not sure any of the Red Aja did. Anaya explained that just now they must attend the Amerlin seat. "Of course," Amalisa said. "The light illumine her and the Creator shelter her. But later then." She stood straight and bowed her head as they left her. Moiraine studied Leandrin as they walked, never looking at her directly. The honey-haired Aes Sedai was staring straight ahead, rosebud lips pursed thoughtfully. She appeared to have forgotten Moiraine and Anaya both. What is she up to? Anaya seemed not to have noticed anything out of the ordinary, but then she always managed to accept people both as they were and as they wanted to be. It constantly amazed Moiraine that Anaya dealt as well as she did in the White Tower. But those who were devious always seemed to take her openness and honesty, her acceptance of everyone, as cunning devices. They were always caught completely off balance when she turned out to mean what she said and say what she meant. Two, she had a way of seeing to the heart of things and of accepting what she saw. Now she blithely resumed speaking of the news. The word from Andor is both good and bad. The street riots in Camelin died down with the coming of spring, but there is still talk, too much talk, blaming the Queen, and Tar Valon as well, for the long winter. Morghaz holds her throne less securely than she did last year, but she holds it still, and will, so long as Gareth Bryn is Captain General of the Queen's Guards. And the Lady Elaine, the daughter heir, and her brother, the Lord Gawain, have come safely to Tar Valon for their training. There was some fear in the White Tower that the custom would be broken. "Not while Morghaz has breath in her body," Moiraine said. Leandrin gave a little start, as if she had just awakened. "Pray that she continues to have breath. The daughter heir's party was followed to the River Arinen by the Children of the Light, to the very bridges of Tar Valon. More still camp outside Camelin for the chance of mischief, and inside Camelin still are those who listen." "Perhaps it is time Morghaz learned a little caution," Anaya sighed. "The world is becoming more dangerous every day, even for a queen, perhaps especially for a queen. She was ever headstrong. I remember when she came to Tar Valon as a girl. She did not have the ability to become a full sister, and it rankled in her. Sometimes I think she pushes her daughter because of that, whatever the girl chooses." Moiraine sniffed disdainfully. "Elaine was born with the spark in her. It was not a matter of choosing. Morghaz would not risk letting the girl die from lack of training if all the white cloaks in Amadicia were camped outside Camelin. She would command Gareth Bryn and the Queen's guards to cut a path through them to Tar Valon, and Gareth Bryn would do it if he had to do it alone. But she still must keep the full extent of the girl's potential secret. Would the people of Andor knowingly accept Elaine on the Lion Throne after Morghaz if they knew? Not just a queen trained in Tar Valon according to custom, but a full Aes Sedai? In all of recorded history, there had been only a handful of queens with the right to be called Aes Sedai, and the few who let it be known had all lived to regret it. She felt a touch of sadness, but too much was afoot to spare aid or even worry for one land and one throne. "What else, Anaya?" "You must know that the Great Hunt of the Horn has been called in Ilion the first time in 400 years. The Ilioners say the last battle is coming." Anaya gave a little shiver, as well she might, but went on without a pause. "And the Horn of Valair must be found before the final battle against the Shadow. Men from every land are already gathering, all eager to be part of the legend, eager to find the Horn. Mirandi and Altara are on their toes, of course, thinking it's all a mask for a move against one of them. That is probably why the Mirandians caught their false dragon so quickly. In any case, there will be a new lot of stories for the bards and gleemen to add to the cycle. The light send it is only new stories."
"Perhaps not the stories they expect," Moiraine said.
Leandrin looked at her sharply, and she kept her face still. "I suppose not," Anaya said placidly. "The stories they least expect will be exactly the ones they will add to the cycle. Beyond that, I have only rumor to offer. The sea folk are agitated, their ships flying from port to port with barely a pause. Sisters from the islands say the Karamor, their chosen one, is coming, but they won't say more. You know how close-mouthed the Atha An Mier are with outsiders about the Karamor, and in this our sisters seem to think more as sea folk than Aes Sedai. The Aiel appear to be stirring, too, but no one knows why. No one ever knows with the Aiel. At least there is no evidence they mean to cross the spine of the world again, thank the light." She sighed and shook her head. "What would I not give for even one sister from among the Aiel? Just one. We know too little of them." Moiraine laughed. "Sometimes I think you belong in the Brown Aja, Anaya." "Almuth Plain," Leandrin said, and looked surprised that she had spoken. "Now that truly is rumor, sister," Anaya said. "A few whispers heard as we were leaving Tar Valon. There may be fighting on Almuth Plain and perhaps Toman Head as well. I say maybe. The whispers were faint. Rumors of rumors. We left before we could hear more.
It would have to be Taraban and Arad Doman, Moiraine said and shook her head. They have squabbled over Almuth Plain for nearly 300 years, but it has never come to open blows. She looked at Leandrin. Aes Sedai were supposed to throw off all their old loyalties to lands and rulers, but few did so completely. It was hard not to care for the land of your birth. Why would they now—
Enough of idle talk, the honey-haired woman broke in angrily. For you, Moiraine, the Amerlin waits.
She took 3 quick strides ahead of the others and threw open one of a pair of tall doors.
For you, the Amerlin will have no idle talk.
Unconsciously touching the pouch at her waist, Moiraine went past Leandrin through the doorway, with a nod, as if the other woman were holding the door for her. She did not even smile at the white flash of anger on Leandrin's face.
What is the wretched girl up to?
Brightly colored carpets covered the anteroom floor in layers, and the room was pleasantly furnished with chairs and cushioned benches and small tables, the wood simply worked or just polished. Brocaded curtains sided the tall arrow slits to make them seem more like windows. No fires burned in the fireplaces, the day was warm, and the Shinaran chill would not come until nightfall. Fewer than 6 of the Aes Sedai who had accompanied the Amerlin were there. Verin Mathwin and Sarah Fell of the Brown Aja did not look up at Moiraine's entrance. Sarah Fell was intently reading an old book with a worn, faded leather cover, handling its tattered pages carefully, while plump Verin, sitting cross-legged beneath an arrow slit, held a small blossom up to the light and made notes and sketches in a precise hand in a book balanced on her knee. She had an open ink pot on the floor beside her and a small pile of flowers on her lap. The Brown sisters concerned themselves with little besides seeking knowledge. Moiraine sometimes wondered if they were really aware of what was going on in the world, or even immediately around them. The 3 other women already in the room turned, but they made no effort to approach Moiraine, only looked at her. One, a slender woman of the Yellow Aja, she did not know. She spent too little time in Tar Valon to know all the Aes Sedai, although their numbers were no longer very great. She was acquainted with the 2 remaining, however. Carlinia was as pale of skin and cold of manner as the white fringe on her shawl, the exact opposite in every way of dark, fiery Alana Mosvani of the Green. But they both stood and stared at her without speaking, without expression. Alana sharply snugged her shawl around her, but Carlinia made no move at all. The slender yellow sister turned away with an air of regret. "The light illumine you all, sisters," Moiraine said. No one answered. She was not sure Seraphel or Verin had even heard. Where are the others? There was no need for them all to be there. Most would be resting in their rooms, freshening from the journey. But she was on edge now, all the questions she could not ask running through her head. None of it showed on her face. The inner door opened and Liana appeared, without her gilt-flamed staff. The keeper of the Chronicles was as tall as most men, willowy and graceful, still beautiful, with coppery skin and short dark hair. She wore a blue stole a hand wide instead of a shawl, for she sat in the hall of the tower, though as keeper, not to represent her Aja. "There you are," she said briskly to Moiraine and gestured to the door behind her. "Come, sister, the Amerlin seat is waiting." She spoke naturally in a clipped, quick way that never changed, whether she was angry or joyful or excited. As Moiraine followed Liana in, she wondered what emotion the keeper was feeling now. Liana pulled the door to behind them. It banged shut with something of the sound of a cell door closing. The Amerlin seat herself sat behind a broad table in the middle of the carpet, and on the table rested a flattened cube of gold, the size of a travel chest, and ornately worked with silver. The table was heavily built, its legs stout, but it seemed to squat under a weight 2 strong men would have had trouble lifting. At the sight of the golden cube, Moiraine had difficulty keeping her face unruffled. The last she had seen of it, it had been safely locked in Agilmar's strong room. On learning of the Amerlin seat's arrival, she had meant to tell her of it herself. That it was already in the Amerlin's possession was a trifle, but a worrisome trifle. Events could be outpacing her. She swept a deep curtsy and said formally, "As you called me, mother, so have I come." The Amaryllin extended her hand, and Moiraine kissed her great serpent ring, no different from that of any other Aes Sedai. Rising, she made her tone more conversational, but not too much so. She was aware of the keeper standing behind her, beside the door. "I hope you had a pleasant journey, mother." The Amaryllin had been born in Tyr of a simple fisherman's family, not a noble house, and her name was Siuan Sanche, though very few had used that name or even thought of it in the 10 years since she had been raised from the hall of the tower. She was the Amaryllin seat, that was the whole of it. The broad stole on her shoulders was striped in the colors of the 7 Ajahs. The Amaryllin was of all Ajahs and of none. She was only of medium height, and handsome rather than beautiful, but her face held a strength that had been there before her elevation, the strength of the girl who had survived the streets of the Mall, Tyr's port district, and her clear blue gaze had made kings and queens, and even the captain commander of the Children of the Light, drop their eyes. Her own eyes were strained now, and there was a new tightness to her mouth.
"We called the winds to speed our vessels up the Erinnin, daughter, and even turned the currents to our aid."
The Amaryllin's voice was deep and sad.
"I have seen the flooding we caused in villages along the river, and the light only knows what we have done to the weather. We will not have endeared ourselves by the damage we've done and the crops we may have ruined. All to reach here as quickly as possible."
Her eyes strayed to the ornate golden cube, and she half lifted a hand as if to touch it, but when she spoke, it was to say, "Elida is in Tar Valon, daughter. She came with Elaine and Gawain."
Moiraine was conscious of Lyanna standing to one side, quiet as always in the presence of the Amaryllin, but watching and listening.
"I am surprised, mother," she said carefully. "This is no time for Morghais to be without Aes Sedai council." Morghais was one of the few rulers to openly admit to an Aes Sedai counselor. Almost all had one, but few admitted it.
"Elida insisted, daughter, and queen or not, I doubt Morghais is a match for Elida in a contest of wills. In any case, perhaps this time she did not wish to be. Elaine has potential, more than I have ever seen before. Already she shows progress. The Red Sisters are swollen up like pufffish with it. I don't think the girl leans to their way of thinking, but she is young and there is no telling. Even if they don't manage to bend her, it will make little difference. Elaine could well be the most powerful Aes Sedai in 1,000 years, and it is the Red Aja who found her. They have gained much status in the hall from the girl."
"I have 2 young women with me in Faldara, mother," Moiraine said. "Both from the 2 rivers, where the blood of Monetheren still runs strong, though they do not even remember there was once a land called Monetheren. The old blood sings, mother, and it sings loudly in the 2 rivers. Egwene, a village girl, is at least as strong as Elaine. I have seen the daughter heir, and I know. As for the other, Nynaeve was the wisdom in their village, yet she is little more than a girl herself. It says something of her that the women of her village chose her wisdom at her age. Once she gains conscious control of what she now does without knowing, she will be as strong as any in Tar Valon. With training, she will shine like a bonfire beside the candles of Elaine and Egwene. And there is no chance these 2 will choose the red. They are amused by men, exasperated by them, but they do like them. They will easily counter whatever influence the Red Aja gains in the White Tower from finding Elaine." The Amaryllin nodded as if it were all of no consequence. Moiraine's eyebrows lifted in surprise before she caught herself and smoothed her features. Those were the 2 main concerns in the Hall of the Tower, that fewer girls who could be trained to channel the one power were found every year, or so it seemed, and that fewer of real power were found. Worse than the fear in those who blamed Aes Sedai for the breaking of the world, worse than the hatred from the Children of the Light, worse even than the workings of Dark Friends, were the sheer dwindling of numbers and the lessening of abilities. The corridors of the White Tower were sparsely populated, where once they had been crowded, and what could once be done easily with the one power could now be done only with difficulty or not at all. Elida had another reason for coming to Tar Valon, daughter. She sent the same message by 6 different pigeons to make sure I received it, and to whom else in Tar Valon she sent pigeons I can only guess. Then came herself. She told the hall of the tower that you are meddling with a young man who is Tar Valon and dangerous. He was in Camelin, she said, but when she found the inn where he had been staying, she discovered you had spirited him away. The people at that inn served us well and faithfully, mother. If she harmed any of them— Moiraine could not keep the sharpness out of her voice, and she heard Leanne shift. One did not speak to the Amerlin seat in that tone. Not even a king on his throne did. You should know, daughter, the Amerlin said dryly, that Elida harms no one except those she considers dangerous, dark friends, or those poor fool men who try to channel the one power, or one who threatens Tar Valon. Everyone else who isn't Aes Sedai might as well be pieces on a stone's board as far as she is concerned. Luckily for him, the innkeeper, one Master Gill, as I remember, apparently thinks much of Aes Sedai, and so answered her questions to her satisfaction. Elida actually spoke well of him. But she spoke more of the young man you took away with you. More dangerous than any man since Arthur Hawkwing, she said. She has the foretelling sometimes, you know, and her words carried weight with the hall. For Lyanna's sake, Moiraine made her voice as meek as she could. That was not very meek, but it was the best she could do. I have 3 young men with me, mother, but none of them is a king, and I doubt very much if any of them even dreams of uniting the world under one ruler. No one has dreamed Arthur Hawkwing's dream since the War of the 100 Years. Yes, daughter. Village youths, so Lord Agelmar tells me. But one of them is Tar Valon. The Amerlin's eyes strayed to the flattened cube again. It was put forward in the hall that you should be sent into retreat for contemplation. This was proposed by one of the sitters for the Green Aja, with the other 2 nodding approval as she spoke. Lyanna made a sound of disgust, or perhaps frustration. She always kept in the background when the Amerlin seat spoke, but Moiraine could understand the small interruption this time. The Green Aja had been allied with the Blue for 1,000 years. Since Arthur Hawkwing's time, they had all but spoken with one voice. I have no desire to hoe vegetables in some remote village, mother. Nor will I, whatever the hall of the tower says. It was further proposed also by the Greens that your care during your retreat should be given to the Red Aja. The Red Sitters tried to appear surprised, but they looked like fisher birds who knew the catch was unguarded. The Amerlin sniffed. The Reds professed reluctance to take custody of one not of their Aja, but said they would accede to the wishes of the hall. Despite herself, Moiraine shivered. That would be most unpleasant, mother. It would be worse than unpleasant, much worse. The Reds were never gentle. She put the thought of it firmly to one side to deal with later. Mother, I cannot understand this apparent alliance between the Greens and the Reds. Their beliefs, their attitudes toward men, their views of our very purposes as Aes Sedai are completely opposite. A Red and a Green cannot even talk to each other without coming to shouts. Things change, daughter. 4 of the last 5 women raised Amerlin have come from the Blue. Perhaps they feel that is too many, or that the Blue way of thinking no longer suffices in a world full of false dragons. After 1,000 years, many things change. The Amerlin grimaced and spoke as if to herself. Old walls weaken, and old barriers fall. She shook herself and her voice firmed. There was yet another proposal, one that still smells like weak old fish on the jetty. Since Lyanna is of the Blue Aja and I came from the Blue, it was put forward that sending 2 sisters of the Blue with me on this journey would give the Blue 4 representatives. Proposed in the hall, to my face, as if they were discussing repairing the drains. 2 of the White sisters stood against me and 2 green.
the yellow muttered among themselves, then would not speak for or against. One more saying nay, and your sisters Anaya and Maigan would not be here. There was even some talk, open talk, that I should not leave the White Tower at all. Moiraine felt a greater shock than on hearing that the Red Aja wanted her in their hands. Whatever Aja she came from, the Keeper of the Chronicles spoke only for the Amerlin, and the Amerlin spoke for all Aes Sedai and all Ajas. That was the way it had always been, and no one had ever suggested otherwise, not in the darkest days of the Trolloc Wars, not when Archer Hawkwing's armies had penned every surviving Aes Sedai inside Tar Valon. Above all, the Amerlin seat was the Amerlin seat. Every Aes Sedai was pledged to obey her. No one could question what she did or where she chose to go. This proposal went against 3,000 years of custom and law. "Who would dare, Mother?" The Amerlin seat's laugh was bitter. "Almost anyone, daughter. Riots in Camelin, the great hunt called without any of us having a hint of it until the proclamation, false dragons popping up like red bells after a rain, nations fading, and more nobles playing at the game of houses than at any time since Arthur Hawkwing cut all their plottings short. And worst of all, every one of us knows the Dark One is stirring again. Show me a sister who does not think the White Tower is losing its grip on events, and if she is not Brown Aja, she is dead. Time may be growing short for all of us, daughter. Sometimes I think I can almost feel it growing shorter." "As you say, Mother, things change, but there are still worse perils outside the Shining Walls than within." For a long moment the Amerlin met Moiraine's gaze, then nodded slowly. "Leave us, Lyanna. I would talk to my daughter Moiraine alone." There was only a moment's hesitation before Lyanna said, "As you wish, Mother." Moiraine could feel her surprise. The Amerlin gave few audiences without the Keeper present, especially not to a sister she had reason to chastise. The door opened and closed behind Lyanna. She would not say a word in the anteroom of what had occurred inside, but the news that Moiraine was alone with the Amerlin would spread through the Aes Sedai and Faldara like wildfire through a dry forest, and the speculation would begin. As soon as the door closed, the Amerlin stood, and Moiraine felt a momentary tingle in her skin as the other woman channeled the one power. For an instant, the Amerlin seat seemed to her to be surrounded by a nimbus of bright light. "I don't know that any of the others have your old trick," the Amerlin seat said, lightly touching the blue stone on Moiraine's forehead with one finger. "But most of us have some small tricks remembered from childhood. In any event, no one can hear what we say now." Suddenly she threw her arms around Moiraine, a warm hug between old friends. Moiraine hugged back as warmly. "You are the only one, Moiraine, with whom I can remember who I was. Even Lyanna always acts as if I had become the stole and the staff, even when we are alone, as if we'd never giggled together as novices. Sometimes I wish we still were novices, you and I, still innocent enough to see it all as a gleeman's tale come true, still innocent enough to think we would find men. They would be princes, remember, handsome and strong and gentle, who could bear to live with women of an Aes Sedai's power. Still innocent enough to dream of the happy ending to the Gleeman's tale, of living our lives as other women do, just with more than they. We are Aes Sedai, Siouan. We have our duty. Even if you and I had not been born to channel, would you give it up for a home and a husband, even a prince? I do not believe it. That is a village goodwife's dream. Not even the greens go so far." The Amerlin stepped back. "No, I would not give it up. Most of the time, no. But there have been times I envied that village goodwife. At this moment, I almost do. Moiraine, if anyone, even Lyanna, discovers what we plan, we will both be stilled. And I can't say they would be wrong to do it." Chapter 5. The Shadow in Shinar. Stilled. The word seemed to quiver in the air, almost visible. when it was done to a man who could channel the power, who must be stopped before madness drove him to the destruction of all around him, it was called gentling. But for Aes Sedai, it was stilling. Stilled, no longer able to channel the flow of the one power, able to sense Sayidar, the female half of the true source, but no longer having the ability to touch it, remembering what was gone forever. So seldom had it been done that every novice was required to learn the name of each Aes Sedai since the breaking of the world who had been stilled, and her crime, but none could think of it without a shudder. Women bore being stilled no better than men did being gentled. Moiraine had known the risk from the first, and she knew it was necessary. That did not mean it was pleasant to dwell on. Her eyes narrowed, and only the gleam in them showed her anger and her worry. Lyanna would follow you to the slopes of Sheol Ghul, Siwan, and into the pit of doom. You cannot think she would betray you. No. But then would she think it betrayal? Is it betrayal to betray a traitor? Do you never think of that? Never. What we do, Siwan, is what must be done. We have both known it for nearly 20 years. The wheel weaves as the wheel wills, and you and I were chosen for this by the pattern. We are a part of the prophecies, and the prophecies must be fulfilled. Must. The prophecies must be fulfilled. We were taught that they will be and must be, and yet that fulfillment is treason to everything else we were taught. Some would say to everything we stand for. Rubbing her arms, the Amarlin Seat walked over to peer through the narrow arrow slit at the garden below. She touched the curtains. Here in the women's apartments they hang draperies to soften the rooms and they plant beautiful gardens, but there is no part of this place not purpose-made for battle, death, and killing. She continued in the same pensive tone. Only twice since the breaking of the world has the Amarlin Seat been stripped of stole and staff. Tetsuan, who betrayed Manetherin for jealousy of Elisande's powers, and Bonwin, who tried to use Artur Hawkwing for a puppet to control the world, and so nearly destroyed Tar Valon. The Amarlin continued her study of the garden. Both of the red, and both replaced by Amarlin from the blue. The reason there has not been an Amarlin chosen from the red since Bonwin, and the reason the red Aja will take any pretext to pull down an Amarlin from the blue, all wrapped neatly together. I have no wish to be the third to lose the stole and the staff, Moiraine. For you, of course, it would mean being stilled and put outside the shining walls. Elida, for one, would never let me off so easily. Moiraine watched her friend's back intently. Light! What has come over her? She has never been like this before. Where is her strength, her fire? But it will not come to that, Siwan. The other woman went on as if she had not spoken. For me, it would be different. Even stilled, an Amarlin who has been pulled down cannot be allowed to wander about loose. She might be seen as a martyr, become a rallying point for opposition. Tetsuan and Bonwin were kept in the White Tower as servants, scullery maids, who could be pointed to as cautions as to what can happen to the mightiest. No one can rally around a woman who must scrub floors and pots all day. Pity her, yes, but not rally to her. Eyes blazing, Moiraine leaned her fists on the table. Look at me, Siwan, look at me. Are you saying that you want to give up after all these years, after all we have done? Give up and let the world go? And all for fear of a switching for not getting the pots clean enough. She put into it all the scorn she could summon, and was relieved when her friend spun to face her. The strength was still there, strained, but still there. Those clear blue eyes were as hot with anger as her own. I remember which of the two of us squealed the loudest when we were switched as novices. You had lived a soft life in Kyriane, Moiraine. Not like working a fishing boat. Abruptly, Siwan slapped the table with a loud crack. No, I am not suggesting giving up, but neither do I propose to watch everything slide out of our hands while I can do nothing. Most of my troubles with the hall stem from you. Even the greens wonder why I haven't called you to the tower and taught you a little discipline. half the sisters with me think you should be handed over to the Reds, and if that happens, you will wish you were a novice again, with nothing worse to look forward to than a switching. Light! If any of them remember we were friends as novices, I'd be there beside you. We had a plan. A plan, Moiraine. Locate the boy and bring him to Tar Valon, where we could hide him, keep him safe and guide him. Since you left the tower, I have had only two messages from you. Two! I feel as if I'm trying to sail the fingers of the dragon in the dark. One message to say you were entering the Two Rivers, going to this village, this Emmons Field. Soon, I thought. He's found, and she'll have him in hand soon. Then word from Caimlin to say you were coming to Shinar, to Faldara, not Tar Valon. Faldara, with the blight almost close enough to touch. Faldara, where Trollocs raid and Murdral ride as near every day as makes no difference. Nearly 20 years of planning and searching, and you toss all our plans practically in the Dark One's face. Are you mad? Now that she had stirred life in the other woman, Moiraine returned to outward calm herself. Calm, but firm insistence, too. The pattern pays no heed to human plans, Siouan. With all our scheming, we forgot what we were dealing with. Taviren, Elida is wrong. Arthur Pendrag Tan Real was never this strongly Taviren. The wheel will weave the pattern around this young man as it wills, whatever our plans. The anger left Amarlin's face, replaced by white-faced shock. It sounds as if you are saying we might as well give up. Do you now suggest standing aside and watching the world burn? No, Siouan, never standing aside. Yet the world will burn, Siouan, one way or another, whatever we do. You could never see that. But we must now realize that our plans are precarious things. We have even less control than we thought, perhaps only a fingernail's grip. The winds of destiny are blowing, Siouan, and we must ride them where they take us. The Amarlin shivered as if she felt those winds icy on the back of her neck. Her hands went to the flattened cube of gold, blunt, capable fingers finding precise points in the complex designs. Cunningly balanced, the top lifted back to reveal a curled, golden horn nestled within a space designed to hold it. She lifted the instrument and traced the flowing silver script, in the old tongue, inlaid around the flaring mouth. "The grave is no bar to my call," she translated, so softly she seemed to be speaking to herself. "The horn of Valir, made to call dead heroes back from the grave, and prophecy said it would only be found just in time for the last battle." Abruptly she thrust the horn back into its niche and closed the lid as if she could no longer bear the sight of it. Agilmar pushed it into my hands as soon as the welcome was done. He said he was afraid to go into his own strong room any longer with it there. The temptation was too great, he said. To sound the horn himself and lead the host that answered its call north through the blight, to level Shaol Ghul itself and put an end to the Dark One. He burned with the ecstasy of glory, and it was that, he said, that told him it was not to be him, must not be him. He could not wait to be rid of it, yet he wanted it still. Moiraine nodded. Agilmar was familiar with the prophecy of the horn. Most who fought the Dark One were. "Let whosoever sounds me think not of glory, but only of salvation." Salvation? The Amarlin laughed bitterly. From the look in Agilmar's eyes, he didn't know whether he was giving away salvation or rejecting the condemnation of his own soul. He only knew he had to be rid of it before it burned him up. He has tried to keep it secret, but he says there are rumors in the keep already. I do not feel his temptation, yet the horn still makes my skin crawl. He will have to take it back into his strong room until I leave. I could not sleep with it even in the next room. She rubbed frown lines from her forehead and sighed. And it was not to be found until just before the last battle. Can it be that close? I thought, hoped, we would have more time. The Kariathon cycle. Yes, Moiraine, you do not have to remind me. I've lived with the prophecies of the dragon as long as you. The Amarlin shook her head. Never more than one false dragon in a generation since the breaking, and now three loose in the world at one time, and three more in the past 2 years. The pattern demands a dragon because the pattern weaves toward Tarmon Gaiden. Sometimes doubt fills me, Moiraine. She said it musingly, as if wondering at it, and went on in the same tone. What if Loghain was the one? He could channel before the Reds brought him to the White Tower and we gentled him. So can Mazrim Time, the man in Saldea. What if it is him? There are sisters in Saldea already. He may be taken by now. What if we have been wrong since the start? What happens if the dragon reborn is gentled before the last battle even begins? Even prophecy can fail if the one prophesied is slain or gentled, and then we face the Dark One naked to the storm. Neither of them is the one, Siwan. The pattern does not demand a dragon, but the one true dragon. Until he proclaims himself, the pattern will continue to throw up false dragons, but after that there will be no others. If Loghain or the other were the one, there would be no others. For he shall come like the breaking dawn, and shatter the world again with his coming and make it anew. Either we go naked in the storm or cling to a protection that will scourge us. The light help us all. The Amarlin shook herself as if to throw off her own words. Her face was set, as though bracing for a blow. You could never hide what you were thinking from me as you do from everyone else, Moiraine. You have more to tell me, and nothing good. For answer, Moiraine took the leather pouch from her belt and upended it, spilling the contents on the table. It appeared to be only a heap of fragmented pottery, shiny black and white. The Amarlin's seat touched one bit curiously, and her breath caught. Quaendiyar. Heartstone, Moiraine agreed. The making of Quaendiyar had been lost at the breaking of the world, but what had been made of Heartstone had survived the cataclysm. Even those objects swallowed by the earth or sunk in the sea had survived. They must have. No known force could break Quaendiyar once it was complete. Even the one power directed against Heartstone only made it stronger, except that some power had broken this. The Amarlin hastily assembled the pieces. What they formed was a disc the size of a man's hand, half blacker than pitch and half whiter than snow, the colors meeting along a sinuous line, unfaded by age. The ancient symbol of Aes Sedai, before the world was broken, when men and women wielded the power together. Half of it was now called the Flame of Tar Valon. The other half was scrawled on doors, the dragon's fang, to accuse those within of evil. Only 7 like it had been made. Everything ever made of Heartstone was recorded in the White Tower, and those 7 were remembered above all. Siwan Sanchez stared at it as she would have at a viper on her pillow. One of the seals on the Dark One's prison, she said finally, reluctantly. It was those 7 seals over which the Amarlin seat was supposed to be watcher. The secret hidden from the world, if the world ever thought of it, was that no Amarlin seat had known where any of the seals were since the Trolloc Wars. We know the Dark One is stirring, Siwan. We know his prison cannot stay sealed forever. Human work can never match the Creator's. We knew he has touched the world again, even if thanked the light only indirectly. Dark friends multiply, and what we called evil but 10 years ago seems almost caprice compared with what now is done every day. If the seals are already breaking, we may have no time at all. Little enough. But that little may be enough. It will have to be. The Amarlin touched the fractured seal, and her voice grew tight, as if she were forcing herself to speak. I saw the boy, you know, in the courtyard during the welcome. It is one of my talents, seeing Taviren. A rare talent these days, even more rare than Taviren, and certainly not of much use. A tall boy, a fairly handsome young man, not much different from any young man you might see in any town. She paused to draw breath. Moiraine, he blazed like the sun. I've seldom been afraid in my life, but the sight of him made me afraid right down to my toes. I wanted to cower, to howl. I could barely speak. Agilmar thought I was angry with him, I said so little. That young man, he's the one we have sought these 20 years? There was a hint of question in her voice. Moiraine answered it. He is. Are you certain? Can he channel the one power? Her mouth strained around the words, and Moiraine felt the tension too, a twisting inside, a cold clutching at her heart. She kept her face smooth, though. He can. A man wielding the one power. That was a thing no Aes Sedai could contemplate without fear. It was a thing the whole world feared. And I will loose it on the world. Randall Thor will stand before the world as the dragon reborn. The Ammerlin shuddered. Randall Thor. It does not sound like a name to inspire fear and set the world on fire. She gave another shiver and rubbed her arms briskly, but her eyes suddenly shone with a purposeful light. If he is the one, then we truly may have time enough. But is he safe here? I have 2 red sisters with me, and I can no longer answer for green or yellow either. The light consume me, I can't answer for any of them, not with this. Even Varin and Seraphel would leap on him the way they would a scarlet adder in a nursery. He is safe, for the moment. The Ammerlin waited for her to say more. The silence stretched until it was plain she would not. Finally, the Ammerlin said, "You say our old plan is useless. What do you suggest now?" "I have purposely let him think I no longer have any interest in him, that he may go where he pleases for all of me." She raised her hands as the Ammerlin opened her mouth. "It was necessary, Siwan. Randall Thor was raised in the 2 rivers, where Manetharan's stubborn blood flows in every vein, and his own blood is like rock beside clay compared to Manetharan's. He must be handled gently, or he will bolt in any direction but the one we want." "Then we'll handle him like a newborn babe. We'll wrap him in swaddling clothes and play with his toes, if that's what you think we need. But to what immediate purpose? His 2 friends, Matrim Cawthon and Perrine Barra, are ripe to see the world before they sink back into the obscurity of the 2 rivers. If they can sink back, they are Taviran too, if lesser than he. I will induce them to carry the horn of Valir to Ilion." She hesitated, frowning. "There is a problem with Matt. He carries a dagger from Shadar Logoth." "Shadar Logoth? Light! Why did you ever let them get near that place? Every stone of it is tainted. There isn't a pebble safe to carry away. Light help us. If Mordeth touched the boy..." The Ammerlin sounded as though she were strangling. "If that happened, the world would be doomed." "But it did not, Siwan. We do what we must from necessity. And it was necessary. I have done enough so that Matt will not infect others, but he had the dagger too long before I knew. The link is still there. I had thought I must take him to Tar Valon to cure it, but with so many sisters present, it might be done here. So long as there are a few you can trust not to see dark friends, where there are none. You and I and 2 others will suffice, using my Angrial. Lyanna will do for one, and I can find another." Suddenly the Ammerlin seat gave a wry grin. "The hall wants that Angrial back, Moiraine. There are not very many of them left, and you are now considered unreliable." Moiraine smiled, but it did not touch her eyes. "They will think worse of me before I am done. Matt will leap at the chance to be so big a part of the legend of the horn, and Perrin should not be hard to convince. He needs something to take his mind off his own troubles. Rand knows what he is, some of it at least, a little, and he is afraid of it, naturally. He wants to go off somewhere alone, where he cannot hurt anyone. He says he will never wield the power again, but he fears not being able to stop it. As well he might. Easier to give up drinking water." "Exactly. And he wants to be free from Aes Sedai." Moiraine gave a small, mirthless smile. "Offered the chance to leave Aes Sedai behind and still stay with his friends a while longer, he should be as eager as Matt." "But how is he leaving Aes Sedai behind? Surely you must travel with him. We can't lose him now, Moiraine." "I cannot travel with him," It is a long way from Faldara to Ilion, but he has traveled almost as far already. He must be let off the leash for a time. There is no help for it. I have had all of their old clothes burned. There's been too much opportunity for some shred of what they were wearing to have fallen into the wrong hands. I will cleanse them before they leave. They will not even realize it has been done. There will be no chance they can be tracked that way, and the only other threat of that kind is locked away here in the dungeon. The Amarlin, midway in nodding approval, gave her a questioning look, but she did not pause. They will travel as safely as I can manage, Siwan. And when Rand needs me in Ilion, I will be there, and I will see that it is he who presents the horn to the Council of Nine and the Assemblage. I will see to everything in Ilion. Siwan, the Ilioners would follow the dragon or Baal Zamon himself if he came bearing the horn of Valir, and so will the greater part of those gathered for the hunt. The true dragon reborn will not need to gather a following before nations move against him. He will begin with a nation around him and an army at his back. The Amarlin dropped back into her chair, but immediately leaned forward. She seemed caught between weariness and hope. But will he proclaim himself? If he's afraid, the light knows he should be Moiraine, but men who name themselves as the dragon want the power. If he does not, I have the means to see him named dragon whether he wills it or not. And even if I somehow fail, the pattern itself will see him named dragon whether he wills it or not. Remember, he is Ta'veren, Siwan. He has no more control over his fate than a candle wick has over the flame. The Amarlin sighed. It's risky, Moiraine. Risky. But my father used to say, girl, if you won't take a chance, you'll never win a copper. We have plans to make. Sit down. This won't be done quickly. I will send for wine and cheese. Moiraine shook her head. We have been closeted alone too long already. If any did try listening and found your warding, they will be wondering already. It is not worth the risk. We can contrive another meeting tomorrow. Besides, my dearest friend, I cannot tell you everything, and I cannot risk letting you know I am holding anything back. I suppose you are right. But first thing in the morning, there's so much I have to know. The morning, Moiraine agreed. The Amarlin rose and they hugged again. In the morning I will tell you everything you need to know. Lyanna gave Moiraine a sharp look when she came out into the anteroom, then darted into the Amarlin's chamber. Moiraine tried to put on a chastened face, as if she had endured one of the Amarlin's infamous upbraidings. Most women, however strong-willed, returned from those big-eyed and weak-kneed, but the expression was foreign to her. She looked more angry than anything else, which served much the same purpose. She was only vaguely aware of the other women in the outer room. She thought some had gone and others come since she went in, but she barely looked at them. The hour was growing late, and there was much to be done before the morning came. Much before she spoke to the Amarlin's seat again. Quickening her step, she moved deeper into the keep.
The column would have made an impressive sight under the waxing moon, moving through the Taraban night to the jangle of harness, had there been anyone to see it. A full 2,000 children of the light, well mounted, in white tabards and cloaks, armor burnished, with their train of supply wagons and farriers and grooms with the strings of remounts. There were villages in this sparsely forested country, but they had left roads behind and stayed clear of even farmers' crofts. They were to meet someone at a fly-speck village near the northern border of Taraban, at the edge of Almuth Plain. Jeffron Bornhold, riding at the head of his men, wondered what it was all about. He remembered too well his interview with Pedron Niall, Lord Captain Commander of the Children of the Light, in Amador. But he had learned little there.
"We are alone, Jeffram,"
the white-haired man had said. His voice was thin and reedy with age.
"I remember giving you the oath. What, 36 years ago it must be now?"
Bornhold straightened. "My Lord Captain Commander, may I ask why I was called back from Camelon, and with such urgency? A push and more gaze could be toppled. There are houses in Andor that see dealing with Tar Valon as we do.
and they were ready to lay claim to the throne. I left Eamon Valda in charge, but he seemed intent on following the daughter heir to Tar Valon. I would not be surprised to learn the man has kidnapped the girl, or even attacked Tar Valon.
And Dane, Bornhold's son, had arrived just before Bornhold was recalled. Dane was full of zeal. Too much zeal, sometimes. Enough to fall in blindly with whatever Valda proposed.
Valda walks in the light, Jephram. But you are the best battle commander among the children. You will assemble a full legion, the best men you can find, and take them into Taraban, avoiding any eyes attached to a tongue that may speak. Any such tongue must be silenced if the eyes see.
Bornhold hesitated. 50 children together, or even 100, could enter any land without question, at least without open question. But an entire legion?
Is it war, my lord captain commander? There is talk in the streets. Wild rumors, mainly, about Otter Hawkwing's armies come back.
The old man did not speak.
The king does not command the children, Lord Captain Bornhold.
For the first time, there was a sharp snap in the Lord Commander's voice.
I do. Let the king sit in his palace and do what he does best. Nothing. You will be met at a village called Alcruna, and there you will receive your final orders. I expect your legion to ride in 3 days. Now go, Jephram. You have work to do.
Bornhold frowned.
Pardon, my lord captain commander, but who will meet me? Why am I risking war with Taraban? You will be told what you must know when you reach Alcruna.
The lord captain commander suddenly looked more than his age. Absently he plucked at his white tunic, with the golden sunburst of the children large on the chest.
There are forces at work beyond what you know, Jephram. Beyond what even you can know. Choose your men quickly. Now go. Ask me no more. And the light ride with you.
Now Bornhold straightened in his saddle, working a knot out of his back.
I am getting old, he thought.
A day and a night in the saddle, with 2 pauses to water the horses, and he felt every gray hair on his head. He would not even have noticed a few years ago.
At least I have not killed any innocents.
He could be as hard on Dark Friends as any man sworn to the light. Dark Friends must be destroyed before they pulled the whole world under the shadow. But he wanted to be sure they were Dark Friends first. It had been difficult avoiding Tarabonner eyes with so many men, even in the backcountry. But he had managed it. No tongues had needed to be silenced. The scouts he sent out came riding back, and behind them came more men in white cloaks, some carrying torches to ruin the night vision of everyone at the head of the column. With a muttered curse, Bornhold ordered a halt while he studied those who came to meet him. Their cloaks bore the same golden sunburst on the breast as his, the same as every child of the light, and their leader even had golden knots of rank below it, equivalent to Bornhold's. But behind their sunbursts were red shepherds' crooks, questioners. With hot irons and pinchers and dripping water, the questioners pulled confession and repentance from Dark Friends. But there were those who said they decided guilt before they ever began. Jephram Bornhold was one who said it.
I have been sent here to meet questioners? We have been waiting for you, Lord Captain Bornhold,
the leader said in a harsh voice. He was a tall, hook-nosed man with the gleam of certainty in his eyes that every questioner had.
You could have made better time. I am Einar Saren, second to Jaqim Caradhrin, who commands the Hand of the Light in Taraban.
The Hand of the Light, the hand that dug out truth, so they said. They did not like the name questioners.
There is a bridge at the village. Have your men move across. We will talk in the inn. It is surprisingly comfortable. I was told by the Lord Captain Commander himself to avoid all eyes. The village has been pacified. Now move your men. I command now. I have orders with the Lord Captain Commander's seal, if you doubt.
Bornhold suppressed the growl that rose in his throat. Pacified. He wondered if the bodies had been piled outside the village, or if they had been thrown into the river. It would be like the questioners, cold enough to kill an entire village for secrecy, and stupid enough to throw the bodies into the river to float downstream and trumpet their deed from Alcruna to Tanchico. "What I doubt is why I am in Taraban with 2,000 men, questioner." Saren's face tightened, but his voice remained harsh and demanding. "It is simple, Lord Captain. There are towns and villages across Almuth Plain with none in authority above a mayor or a town council. It is past time they were brought to the light. There will be many dark friends in such places." Bornhold's horse stamped. "Are you saying, Saren, that I've brought an entire legion across most of Taraban in secrecy to root a few dark friends out of some grubby villages? You are here to do as you are told, Bornhold. To do the work of the light. Are you sliding from the light?" Saren's smile was a grimace. "If battle is what you seek, you may have your chance. The strangers have a great force on Toman Head. More than Taraban and Arad-Doman together may be able to hold, even if they can stop their own bickering long enough to work together. If the strangers break through, you will have all the fighting you can handle. The Taraboners claim the strangers are monsters, creatures of the Dark One. Some say they have Aes Sedai to fight for them. If they are dark friends, these strangers, they will have to be dealt with too, in their turn." For a moment, Bornhold stopped breathing.
"Then the rumors are true. Arthur Hawkwing's armies have returned."
"Strangers," Saren said flatly. He sounded as if he regretted having mentioned them. "Strangers and probably dark friends from wherever they came. That is all we know and all you need to know. They do not concern you now." "We are wasting time. Move your men across the river, Bornhold. I will give you your orders in the village." He whirled his horse and galloped back the way he had come, his torchbearers riding at his heels. Bornhold closed his eyes to hasten the return of his night sight.
"We are being used like stones on a board."
"Fire!"
He opened his eyes as his second appeared at his side, stiffening in his saddle before the Lord Captain. The gaunt-faced man had almost the questioner's light in his eyes, but he was a good soldier despite.
"There is a bridge ahead. Move the legion across the river and make camp. I will join you as soon as I can."
He gathered his reins and rode in the direction the questioner had taken.
"Stones on a board. But who is moving us? And why?"
Afternoon shadows gave way to evening as Leandrin made her way through the women's apartments. Beyond the arrow slits, darkness grew and pressed on the light from the lamps in the corridor. Twilight was a troubled time for Leandrin of late, that and dawn. At dawn the day was born, just as twilight gave birth to night. But at dawn night died, and at twilight day. The Dark One's power was rooted in death. He gained power from death, and at those times she thought she could feel his power stirring. Something stirred in the half-dark, at least. Something she almost thought she could catch if she turned quickly enough. Something she was sure she could see if she looked hard enough. Serving women in black and gold curtsied as she passed, but she did not respond. She kept her eyes fixed straight ahead and did not see them. At the door she sought, she paused for a quick glance up and down the hall. The only women in sight were servants. There were no men, of course. She pushed open the door and went in without knocking. The outer room of the Lady Amalisa's chambers were brightly lit, and a blazing fire on the hearth held back the chill of the Shinaran night. Amalisa and her ladies sat about the room in chairs and on the layered carpets, listening while one of their number, standing, read aloud to them. It was The Dance of the Hawk and the Hummingbird by Tevin Erwin, which purported to set forth the proper conduct of men toward women and women toward men. Leandrin's mouth tightened. She certainly had not read it, but she had heard as much as she needed about it. Amalisa and her ladies greeted each pronouncement with gales of laughter, falling against each other and drumming their heels on the carpets like girls.
The reader was the first to become aware of Leandrin's presence. She cut off with a surprised widening of her eyes. The others turned to see what she was staring at, and silence replaced laughter. All but Amalisa scrambled to their feet, hastily smoothing hair and skirts. The Lady Amalisa rose gracefully with a smile. "You honor us with your presence, Leandrin. This is a most pleasant surprise. I did not expect you until tomorrow. I thought you would want to rest after your long journey." Leandrin cut her off sharply, addressing the air. "I will speak to the Lady Amalisa alone. All of you will leave. Now." There was a moment of shocked silence, then the other women made their goodbyes to Amalisa. One by one they curtsied to Leandrin, but she did not acknowledge them. She continued to stare straight ahead at nothing, but she saw them and heard. Honorifics offered with breathy unease at the Aes Sedai's mood, eyes falling when she ignored them. They squeezed past her to the door, pressing back awkwardly so their skirts did not disturb hers. As the door closed behind the last of them, Amalisa said, "Leandrin, I do not understand. Do you walk in the light, my daughter?" There would be none of that foolishness of calling her sister here. The other woman was older by some years, but the ancient forms would be observed. However long they had been forgotten, it was time they were remembered. As soon as the question was out of her mouth, though, Leandrin realized she had made a mistake. It was a question guaranteed to cause doubt and anxiety, coming from an Aes Sedai, but Amalisa's back stiffened and her face hardened. "That is an insult, Leandrin Sedai. I am Shainaran, of a noble house and the blood of soldiers. My line has fought the Shadow since before there was a Shinar, 3,000 years without fail or a day's weakness." Leandrin shifted her point of attack, but she did not retreat. Striding across the room, she took the leather-bound copy of The Dance of the Hawk and the Hummingbird from the mantelpiece and hefted it without looking at it. "In Shinar above other lands, my daughter, the light must be precious and the shadow feared." Casually, she threw the book into the fire. Flames leaped as if it were a log of fat wood, thundering as they licked up the chimney. In the same instant, every lamp in the room flared, hissing, so fiercely did they burn, flooding the chamber with light. Here above all, here so close to the cursed blight, where corruption waits, here even one who thinks he walks in the light may still be corrupted by the shadow. Beads of sweat glistened on Amalisa's forehead. The hand she had raised in protest for her book fell slowly to her side. Her features still held firm, but Leandrin saw her swallow and her feet shift. "I do not understand, Leandrin Sedai. Is it the book? It is only foolishness." There was a faint quaver in her voice. "Good." Glass lamp mantles cracked as flames leaped higher and hotter, lighting the room as bright as unsheltered noon. Amalisa stood stiff as a post, her face tight as she tried not to squint. "It is you who are foolish, my daughter. I care nothing for books. Here men enter the blight and walk in its taint, in the very shadow. Why wonder you that that taint may seep into them? Whether or not against their will, still it may seep. Why think you the Amarlin Seat herself has come?" "No," it was a gasp. "Of the red am I, my daughter," Leandrin said relentlessly. "I hunt all men corrupted."
"I don't understand."
"Not only those foul ones who try the one power. All men corrupted, high and low do I hunt."
"I don't."
Amalisa licked her lips unsteadily and made a visible effort to gather herself.
"I do not understand, Leandrin Sedai. Please,
high even before low."
"No."
As if some invisible support had vanished, Amalisa fell to her knees and her head dropped.
"Please, Leandrin Sedai, say you do not mean Agilmar. It cannot be him."
In that moment of doubt and confusion, Leandrin struck. She did not move, but lashed out with the one power. Amalisa gasped and gave a jerk, as if she had been pricked with a needle, and Leandrin's petulant mouth perked in a smile. This was her own special trick from childhood, the first learned of her abilities.
It had been forbidden to her as soon as the Mistress of Novices discovered it, but to Leandrin that only meant one more thing she needed to conceal from those who were jealous of her. She strode forward and pulled Amalisa's chin up. The metal that had stiffened her was still there, but it was baser metal now, malleable to the right pressures. Tears trickled from the corners of Amalisa's eyes, glistening on her cheeks. Leandrin let the fires die back to normal. There was no longer any need for such. She softened her words, but her voice was as unyielding as steel. "Daughter, no one wants to see you and Agilmar thrown to the people as dark friends. I will help you, but you must help."
"Help you?"
Amalisa put her hands to her temples. She looked confused.
"Please, Leandrin Sedai, I don't understand. It is all so... it's all..."
It was not a perfect ability. Leandrin could not force anyone to do what she wanted, though she had tried. Oh, how she had tried. But she could open them wide to her arguments, make them want to believe her, want more than anything to be convinced of her rightness. "Obey, daughter. Obey and answer my questions truthfully, and I promise that no one will speak of you and Agilmar as dark friends. You will not be dragged naked through the streets to be flogged from the city if the people do not tear you to pieces first. I will not let this happen. You understand?"
"Yes, Leandrin Sedai, yes. I will do as you say and answer you truly."
Leandrin straightened, looking down at the other woman. The Lady Amalisa stayed as she was, kneeling, her face as open as a child waiting to be comforted and helped by someone wiser and stronger. There was a rightness about it to Leandrin. She had never understood why a simple bow or curtsy was sufficient for Aes Sedai when men and women knelt to kings and queens. What queen has within her my power? Her mouth twisted angrily, and Amalisa shivered. "Be easy in yourself, my daughter. I have come to help you, not to punish. Only those who deserve it will be punished. Truth only, speak to me."
"I will, Leandrin Sedai. I will. I swear it by my house and honor."
"Moiraine came to Faldara with a dark friend." Amalisa was too frightened to show surprise.
"Oh no, Leandrin Sedai, no. That man came later. He is in the dungeons now."
"Later, you say? But it is true that she speaks often with him? She is often in company with this dark friend? Alone?"
"Sometimes, Leandrin Sedai.
Only sometimes.
She wishes to find out why he came here. Moiraine Sedai is..."
Leandrin held up her hand sharply, and Amalisa swallowed whatever else she had been going to say.
"By three young men Moiraine was accompanied. This I know. Where are they? I have been to their rooms, and they are not to be found."
"I do not know, Leandrin Sedai. They seem nice boys. Surely you don't think they are dark friends?"
"Not dark friends, no. Worse. By far more dangerous than dark friends, my daughter. The entire world is in danger from them. They must be found. You will command your servants to search the keep, and your ladies, and yourself. Every crack and cranny. To this you will see personally. Personally! And to no one will you speak of it save those I name. None else may know. None. From Faldara in secrecy these young men must be removed, and to Tar Valon taken. In utter secrecy."
"As you command, Leandrin Sedai. But I do not understand the need for secrecy. No one here will hinder Aes Sedai."
"Of the Black Aja you have heard?"
Amalisa's eyes bulged, and she leaned back away from Leandrin, raising her hands as though to shield herself from a blow.
"A vile rumor, Leandrin Sedai. Vile. There are no Aes Sedai who serve the Dark One. I do not believe it. You must believe me. Under the light, I swear I do not believe it. By my honor and my house, I swear."
Coolly, Leandrin let her go on, watching the last remaining strength leech out of the other woman with her own silence. Aes Sedai had been known to become angry, very angry, with those who even mentioned the Black Aja, much less those who said they believed in its hidden existence. After this, with her will already weakened by that little childhood trick, Amalisa would be as clay in her hands. After one more blow. "The Black Aja is real, child.
real and here within Faldara's walls. Amalisa knelt there, her mouth hanging open. The Black Aja, Aes Sedai, who were also dark friends. Almost as horrible to learn the Dark One himself walked Faldara Keep. But Leandrin would not let up now. Any Aes Sedai in the halls you pass, a black sister could be. This I swear. I cannot tell you which they are, but my protection you can have, if in the light you walk and me obey.
I will,
Amalisa whispered hoarsely.
I will. Please, Leandrin Sedai, please say you will protect my brother and my ladies.
Who deserves protection, I will protect. Concern yourself with yourself, my daughter, and think only of what I have commanded of you. Only that. The fate of the world rides on this, my daughter. All else you must forget.
Yes, Leandrin Sedai. Yes, yes.
Leandrin turned and crossed the room, not looking back until she reached the door. Amalisa was still on her knees, still watching her anxiously.
Rise, my lady Amalisa.
Leandrin made her voice pleasant, with only a hint of the mocking she felt. Sister, indeed. Not one day as a novice would she last, and power to command she has. Rise. Amalisa straightened in slow, stiff jerks, as if she'd been bound hand and foot for hours. As she finally came upright, Leandrin said, the steel back in full strength, And if you fail the world, if you fail me, that wretched dark friend in the dungeon will be your envy. From the look on Amalisa's face, Leandrin did not think failure would come from any lack of effort on her part. Pulling the door shut behind her, Leandrin suddenly felt a prickling across her skin. Breath catching, she whirled about, looking up and down the dimly lit hall. Empty. It was full night beyond the arrow slits. The hall was empty, yet she was sure there had been eyes on her. The vacant corridor, shadowy between the lamps on the walls, mocked her. She shrugged uneasily, then started down the hall determinedly.
Fancies take me, nothing more.
Full night already, and there was much to do before dawn. Her orders had been explicit.
Pitch blackness covered the dungeons, whatever the hour, unless someone brought in a lantern. But Padan Fain sat on the edge of his cot, staring into the dark with a smile on his face. He could hear the other two prisoners grumbling in their sleep, muttering in nightmares. Padan Fain was waiting for something. Something he had been awaiting for a long time. For too long, but not much longer. The door to the outer guard room opened, spilling in a flood of light, darkly outlining a figure in the doorway. Fain stood.
You. Not who I expected.
He stretched with a casualness he did not feel. Blood raced through his veins. He thought he could leap over the keep if he tried.
Surprises for everyone, eh? Well, come on. The night's getting old, and I want some sleep sometime.
As a lamp came into the cell chamber, Fain raised his head, grinning at something unseen yet felt beyond the dungeon's stone ceiling.
It isn't over yet, he whispered. The battle's never over.